Kia ora, good morning, welcome to Fringe Radio. It's day three of Fringe, and I'm Damien. I'm going to be here this morning from 9 till 12. I've got a few people coming in at 9.15. I'm talking to Julie Edwards from Barrier Ninja. So that's a verbatim play that's on at Fringe this week. And I've got a couple of other guests coming in later on. The main event today is Hearty Emmy Hearties, which is running in town, sort of around the loop, in Whangarei, based at the town basin and all around the loop, 11 a.m. till 2 p.m. So there's lots going on. It's, there's music, dancing, singing, circus, and lots of different kinds of street performers. There's a buskers festival, a family day out, and some of the fringe artists will be down there doing their thing. There's a mermaid parade, so you can dress up in your nautical gear, and that starts on the Canopy Bridge at 11:30 and goes all the way around the loop. I believe Mermaid Bait will be part of that parade, and with a boat somehow involved. And so that goes all the way around the loop to the Hihiawa Cultural Centre. Oh, sorry, along the loop to the Hihiawa Cultural Centre and back again. And best dress gets a spot prize. Don't let the weather put you off. Hearty Emmy Hearties is still going ahead. There might not be electric music because of the risk of dampness getting into things, but I'm sure that the team will make it an amazing day out. So hope you get down to that. this morning I'm going to be playing some Baroque pop. That's my new genre of choice, and so while I'm getting ready for meeting Julie Edwards, here's Vampire Weekend. was unmistakably Vampire Weekend and M79. So welcome to Fringe Radio for day three of Fringe. Hope you're getting into it and seeing some great stuff. And if you're passing by the studio at 116 Bank Street, feel free to drop in and tell me what you've been seeing and enjoying and looking forward to. So I thought I'd start off with a bit of a review of yesterday. There was lots on yesterday, and the Human Library was a great event down at Whangarei Central Library. There were 12 books or humans who were sort of acting as books, and you could go in and spend half an hour talking to them about their lived experience, on the basis that if you're talking to someone face to face, it's much, I guess, easier to understand them and much harder to judge them. And according to Verena, who organized that event, it was very successful, very enjoyable, and she's inspired to do it again. So that's cool. If you went down to that, be interesting to hear what you thought. You can send us an email, bark@beagleradio.co.nz, or you can drop by the studio. Also on yesterday, I managed to see Back to Square One, which I'd been looking forward to, and that was performed down at Hihiawa Cultural Centre by Anders Falsti Jensen, and it's a great concept for a show. It basically starts with an audience sitting in a square around a sort of rectangular space, and then with chalk he draws his grandmother's apartment in Denmark, and pretty much to scale, and invites us all to write our name in a circle and in chalk in front of us, and then tells the story of his grandmother during lockdown, and then somehow weaves the myth of Thor, Ragnarok, the end of time, which I guess relates to the sort of sense of doom that came along with the pandemic. He works that in, and then invites us all, draws a picture of Yggdrasil, which is the tree of life, I think the sort of Norse mythical tree of life, and invites us all to draw a line from our name to the roots of that tree. And really simple kind of concept, and he's a very sort of warm and engaging performer who he came in for an interview on Friday and said he's not really an actor, he's more of a writer, but this show is very personal, so he felt that he was really just playing himself to some extent, although the voice of his grandmother, he voiced his grandmother's his grandmother in the show, and told the story of Thor and Ragnarok, and drew a big dragon sort of behind us outside the area of his grandmother's house, and it was great. It was a real clever and simple and touching one person show, and the audience ranged in age probably from about 3 to about, I don't know, 70, 75, something like that, and it was really accessible for all of us, and the 3-year-old Lyra helped him colour in the dragon, and it was just, it was a fun, accessible, sort of on the ground kind of show, so we all felt very involved and engaged. And if you'd like to know a bit more about the show, Penny Fit went on Friday night and wrote a great review, which is on theatreview.org.nz. Just have to search up Back to Square One. Okay, time for maybe some more music while we wait for Julie to come in, and she'll be here in 5 minutes. So let's play a Baroque pop classic, Golden Brown by the Stranglers.
Like sun, lays me down with my mind. She runs throughout the night. No need to fight, never a frown with golden brown. Every time, just like the last, on the ship, tied to the mast, too distant. advance, takes both my hands, never a frown, with golden brown. Temptress, through the ages she's heading west, from far away, stays for a day, never a frown, with golden brown.
Kia ora anō, that was the Meeting Place by The Last Shadow Puppets, which is on my Baroque Pop with Indie Sensibilities playlist, which, of course, Spotify's got a playlist for every obsession. And so that's what I'm playing tracks off this morning. Some surprising things on there that I didn't know were Baroque Pop, but It's a whole new genre to explore, and some very familiar ones, bands like the Fleet Foxes and Nick Drake. So very happy with that. Okay, so I've got Julie Davis here in the studio with
Edwards.
Me.
Edwards.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay. Julie Davis. Okay, Jamie.
Julie Edwards. I don't know where the Davis came from. Julie's part of Barrier Ninja, which is actually not performing at Fringe till the last week. So Thursday, the 13th of October, there's two shows here at 116, one at 12 and one at 6 p.m. And then on Friday, the 14th of October, there's a show from 5:30 to 6:30 p.m. And that's a New Zealand Sign Language interpreted show. So three opportunities to see it. And the show's an hour long.
Yep.
Great. And so Julie was telling me that she's just the it's a solo show, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little bit about how the show came to be and how long you've been. Because one of the things I found out about it was it's been performed to medical students at
yeah, Anna. Well, Fred Kiwine, who's Tainui Maniapoto,
mm-hmm.
she was doing her Master's of Arts at Otago, and she used it as her thesis, exploring the interface between wellness and the arts.
Right.
And so she also lectured at the Dunedin School of Medicine, Māori, the Hui process, Māori medicine.
Ah.
Yeah, so she interviewed 9 recipients about their professional, personal experiences of hauora and the barriers that they face.
Nine recipients?
People. I know.
You don't say patient?
No, because the professional and personal experiences, consultants to health workers.
Oh, I see. So not
just hauora Māori, sorts of.
Not just tangata whai ora?
Kau.
Oh, okay, right. Okay, so it's a range of voices of people involved in hauora generally.
That's right. And with the so she got a kind of a rounded, point of view of the challenges, and there are challenges.
Mm.
And then videoed them, and then with their, blessing, I watched and studied all the videos and the mannerisms and the vocal intonations.
Did she bring you in as the performer like that? Mm-hmm. So she was doing the research.
She was doing it first. She did it for the fifth year medical students.
Right.
And then there's kōrero around it. So it just is a way to help engage their hearts and minds and get them really thinking about, their future abilities to consult people who don't want to use the system. And it's an education resource.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Verbatim Theatre seems to lend itself to doing that quite well.
It did for, it does. It's used in prisons. It's used in a lot of, drama therapy and all sorts. But it hadn't been on its feet in a theatre yet. So we knew it worked in that space. So then
how did you deliver it to the, where did you do it? Like, where did you perform
when
it?
When I first did it, I did it at, I took it into the theatre. So I took it to Kiamo in Wellington.
Right.
2019, was it 18?
Right.
Before COVID. And it stood up really well in a theatre space around our kaupapa, our theatre marae kaupapa, which is, there's a lot of protection and because these people are real. And then there's always a kōrero afterwards, a ngā kōrero with
the audience.
What it evokes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's used as a discussion.
So when you discuss it, it's sort of you can take it into the realm of people, audience's own experiences, or do you tend to discuss what's gone on in the show, or both, or
really, if the show works, people want to talk about their experiences, not about the the technique of verbatim, which is really interesting in itself because there's all sorts of verbatim, so this is a really stripped back version of every nuance, every word for word, every kind of
gesture,
every gesture as much as possible.
So you try to, and that's my understanding, because we had the Keezer and the Margarine here recently.
Yeah, yeah, which I did the first tour of.
Oh, yeah. I see, right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So similar to Cindy's, to the Keys.
Yeah.
But really it's just one person, neutral, no aids, nothing else.
Oh, no costume changes.
Absolutely not.
No set.
No. Well, in a sense, it's some symbolic. Yeah, there's always a set because you have to be there.
Yeah.
So, there's a set.
So in terms of the content of the show, it's is you as a single performer there, and are you sort of telling the stories sort of sequentially, or are you kind of weaving them?
The way we've edited it is weaving around themes, you know, whakawhanaungatanga, you know, all sorts of the tikanga, and whether it suits, how it doesn't suit certain environments, and, you know, like there's one beautiful person, whānau, of a husband, a wife and their daughter who doesn't say anything, but she's there, and we know she's there because I, you know, I play her silently, but he was having kidney transplants, so he's on dialysis, and it was their story, sort of the centre, kind of is
the centre of the
heart
piece?
Of this piece, really.
Right.
Yeah.
So how do we know, as audience, do you signal to us when you're changing character or changing story?
I introduce them at the beginning. Yep. I introduce aids that might help you, you know, and voices that, you know. And we also have projection of the themes around the scenes, I guess.
So we'd see a word like whakawhanaungatanga on the screen, and then we'd know that's where. Okay, Okay.
Yeah.
So initially it was performed to two medical students?
Yeah.
And was that in like a lecture theatre or like?
At Otago School of Medicine.
Right.
Yeah, for 5 years, four years.
Ah.
Yeah.
So it was sort of part of the, I guess, the curriculum or the learning, the teaching.
Yeah. And then we took it to Auckland Live last year. We tried to take it a few times, I mean, to Matariki.
Mm.
We accessed a whole lot of GPs to those shows, and they responded like beyond words. They could see that it needed to be something that was in boardrooms in health, you know, at conferences. Or
what sort of things surprised you about them?
Yeah,
the way
good question. Yeah, that they have no resource in professional development to help provoke or create, I guess, professional development, workshopping around how we overcome these barriers for people and get them to the doctor,
sort of
get them into the
systemic
system
barriers to them coming in.
Mm-hmm.
And what are some of those barriers? Like I can imagine, but
there's, well, like from one of the, from the people that I play, you know, there's a nurse who is always, she calls herself the barrier ninja, which is where she's always having to connect the, you know, systemic barriers like appointment times that hinder people coming in from out of town, whānau, not, you know, being so whakamā to get their elders in there. There's, and because it's not our system.
How
to integrate, how to change the system, really. It's not,
it's
Māori big, don't need to change.
No, I mean, it's a big kōrero going on at the moment, isn't it? You know, with Oranga Tamariki and, and all these sort of realisations. I can't imagine how easy it's going to be or difficult to turn Oranga Tamariki into something that is more
normal. Yeah, that is the system.
Not
a... Yeah, because the system doesn't work. Got to be.
Mm.
It's got to be mainstream.
So, so this is a problem everywhere, presumably. It's not just, you know, it's a problem for tangata whaiora everywhere.
I think internationally.
Right.
For Indigenous culture.
Yeah.
For, you know, I mean, Australia's, hello.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. So Barrier Ninja is that name came out of this nurse who considers herself, so Barrier Ninja as in someone who demolishes barriers. Okay, so how does she...
Yeah.
And was she one of the people who came into the show, made it into the show? Like, her voice is in the show?
She's in the show. She's in the show once. Yeah,
is she
only
Māori?
Needs to be there once. Culch, not Māori.
No.
Māori.
No.
Now, there's a consultant, you know. There's... Yeah, I'll tell you them, actually. There's a health manager, a hauora Māori social worker, Reitu. There's the whānau.
Mm-hmm.
It's nine.
Yeah.
Oh, a fourth year medical student.
Right.
Yeah, really great. There's a beautiful nurse who really talks about her lovely brother that was just lost his life because of the system, because the system failed him with timing and, you know, needing, long story. There's,
wow, well, it sounds very diverse. So
yeah.
You presumably wanted it to be a diverse range of voices, and
as much as possible, you know. And maybe, I mean, Fran and I, you know, this is ongoing for us. We want to continue the Barry Ninja's used as a teaching resource now in schools, as an educational pack that Auckland Live have created that goes out to schools with the video of Barry Ninja of me and a discussion pack and an educational, but it's really targeted to the health curriculum, not so much the drama curriculum, right. Although it's useful.
Right.
Because, I mean, verbatim, it's a modality that most people can access if they're not real, if they're not professional actors and, you know, creatives.
Yeah.
They can interview people, find out their stories. Like, I've done a lot of this work with women in, with coming out of, on parole in prison, mm-hmm. and it's a way for them to record their stories and then just, you know, strip it back. And what it does, honestly, Damien, it has this magical ability to make, so avert the mediation process between the audience and the actor and the, I mean, the recipient, the people,
yeah.
and the actor and the audience. Yeah, it's quite, it's quite an extraordinary vibe that travels through time, as long as the actor doesn't get in the way.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And that was my understanding from Cindy. We did a workshop with her after the show, and,
yeah.
you know, she emphasised that it's not the actor's job to yeah. interpret or to dramatise.
Embellish, nothing.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, so and definitely not entertain or
no.
Perform.
And is that hard for you as a performer to sort of...
Yeah, that's why it is a great medium for people who want to start drama to have a go at, because right. they realise there is very little performing that you need to do, like yeah. get the acting out of the way.
Yeah.
yeah, and just really study the wairua of the people.
Yeah.
And it will come through if you've done your homework and you really get the you know, the nuances,
yeah.
you know, the body language, everything.
So in performance, you've got the speaker in your ear, the audio,
yeah.
and you're the voice of the person that you're, I don't know what you say, performing
yeah.
or representing,
yeah.
is in your ear.
Yeah.
And part of our little workshop that we did with Cindy and the Keys and the Margarine was to make a verbatim play, and we had that thing where we were listening to the voice of the person in our ear, and I found that... Does that make it harder for you as a performer, or what does it do?
some people follow the track, and some people depends, you know, are right on it.
Yeah.
I tend to just follow it, because it's I think you've got to have it playing, because you cannot repeat things like. No, that's not what I, you know, and you can't even transcribe it.
So
yeah?
You can't learn it so well that you don't need the audio?
Absolutely not. Oh. There is absolutely no way.
Because would you start to embellish if you did that?
Yeah.
Does it sort of, so it keeps you honest, having that voice in your ear?
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Yeah. yeah. Keeps you honest.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it keeps you serving.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Watching the Keys and the Margarine, after talking to Cindy, you know, you can appreciate the absolute fidelity of to the, you know, and it was actually really enjoyable.
Yeah, especially with Nigel and Tanya, when their children, you know, first came to see, I think Nigel had passed from the Keys.
Yeah.
When we did it in Wellington, they first came to see it, they actually saw they got to experience their dad, you know.
Wow.
And it wasn't like a actor's representation of their dad. It came through.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really touching.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about yourself as a performer. What's your story?
Well, I started here.
In Whangarei.
Yeah.
You're a founder member of
85, Foundland member, Julie Edwards. We did Driftwood.
Yeah.
And The Dream, we did Midsonite's Dream,
Alan
Palmer.
Rachel McAlpine's play, Driftwood?
Yay.
Yeah.
We were the Timberbones, me, Willie Davis, and gosh, a lot of us went on to do careers, yeah.
Right.
So, I was 15, I was from Bay College.
Right.
And then,
so you grew up in Taitokoro? You were
Taitokoro, yeah. Kawakawa, and Opoa.
Right, so is that where you're from? Yeah. Is that where your marae is?
Kau, yeah, Ngāti Whakaue, so Rotorua, Nongataha, and Ngāti Whare, which is sort of, you know, Rua Tahuna, Te Whaiti, Irawira.
Right.
Tūhoe.
So Te Arawa Tūhoe.
Right, okay. So, but you went to school at Bay of Islands?
Yeah, and then Mum and Dad moved. Yeah.
What was that like in 85? What was Kawakawa like in 85?
Well, we didn't have the toilets. I loved it.
I was head girl. Were you? College. Oh. I just like tell everyone off.
To be a good role model.
Oh, yeah. I was smoking weed on the field in circles at lunchtime.
You
could put that out, Moana. What you going to do about Julie?
Funny.
But came here, and this is where I found my tribe, you know. And then I went to drama school a couple of years after.
So Toy wouldn't have been going long then,
was New Zealand Drama School.
That was called New Zealand Drama School, and then it became Toy Whakaari.
Yeah, we made it Toy Whakaari our year.
Wow.
Yeah.
How, like, insisted that it
be bicultural without it inclusive.
In 85.
Well, there's three of us, Samo and me, Cliff, Hori, Māori, three Māori and Sima, you know, so our stories weren't able to tell Māori stories. That was Nancy Brunning and Huni Koka, you know.
Oh, wow.
That was all Cliff Curtis.
Right.
Yeah. They so all went actually, that we made it Toy.
Cool.
Yeah. We made it Toy.
Awesome. That's an interesting story.
Because now I just go, it was New Zealand Drama School.
Mm.
But it was George Webby then, and I also went to Theatre Corporate a year before then, but I did classes there at Public Works in Auckland. That was the Mercury Theatre.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
I was too little to get into the big guns.
Right. And so you did a degree at Toy. Was it a degree in those days?
No, it was diploma.
Diploma.
Mm.
And then...
I got a contract. Oh, we all did the Shortland Street, you know, gig because that was 92. Mm. But before then, went to the Fortune Theatre in Dunedin because that was when we had companies.
Right.
So I got a whole 2 years back to back, which was really my training ground. So we did 9 shows in a year. And I did a lot of theatre marae with Jim Moriarty.
Oh, cool.
With Te Hua o Te Waitapu.
Right.
What
were some of the plays that, or the, some of the things that came out of that?
With Jim?
What sorts of...
What did we do? We did Te Hara, Te Hokinga Mai.
Were these sort of devised shows, or were they scripted
these
shows?
These were John Broughton plays. We did 1981, which was a... Broughton show, Wetiihi Maira's, Rangi Moana, Apirana Taylor's, Eklemo Batat, oh my gosh, no, Fire Kaido.
Oh.
Lots of really groundbreaking theatre marae, you know, shows about us.
Does theatre marae still happen? Is it still?
Aye, yeah.
Really?
Jim and Helen, and they've just done a great show, although they take it to... They take it to marae, to whānau.
Right.
It's not mainstream.
No.
Yeah. So, te rākauhua o tō wāo tapu in Pōneke a lot. And they've just done The Swing, which addresses family abuse.
Mm.
He's still creating really important work in prisons. And
Jim is?
He is. Wow. Just seen him recently. But then at the Fortune Theatre, we were really lucky because we had Roger there, Roger Hall.
Ah.
So we got to do all those first, you know, by degrees, taking off. Middle-aged Spread wasn't
all Roger was already Hall plays. Done.
All of them.
Wow.
Gosh, so many.
So you did 9 bookends. Shows a year.
Yeah, we did do 9 shows a year.
And that was sort of like... After Toy, so you're kind of like straight into full-time work?
Yeah, it's back to back. Yeah, you're contracted. Yeah. And then I think it finished... Oh, and then I worked at the Mercury, and then they closed us down just before we opened Packer Girls. Mm. So the Mercury was no more, and then that went on to become ATC, way down.
Right.
Raymond took it off to Altair to the Herald.
Right.
And then eventually Colin took it and went down to the... what do you call it? Down the bottom? The viaduct. The ASB.
Yeah.
Auckland Theatre Company.
Yeah.
And then Downstage was going, so we did a lot of work at Downstage at the Hannah Playhouse in,
right.
in Wellington.
Wow.
Some great shows there in that time, because that was all Murray Lynch and
mm.
Sunny Amy was still rocking about.
Uh-huh. Wow.
She was in bed. Have you heard of her?
No, I've heard of Murray Lynch. He's still at Playmarket, isn't he?
But, yeah, yeah.
Oh, no, I haven't. Who, tell yeah. us about Sunny Amy.
Okay, so Sunny Amy, she is a director, mentor, or she's definitely my kaitiaki of
mm.
everything to do with caring for an artist.
Mm.
She first directed, she directed Driftwood
oh.
here at Youth Theatre. That's where I met her when I was 15. Alan Palmer, my dearest friend to this day who created the Youth Theatre,
yeah.
Has returned to Whangarei.
Yeah, so I heard that.
Al's here.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, he went away back to UK for a while and then returned. Mm-hmm. And Jules. But Sunny is still alive in Wellington, and she was one of the first to take over the transition from New Zealand Drama School to Toi Whakaari.
Mm.
Yeah, she was at the Realm.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow.
She used to be Laurence Olivier's personal assistant. You all know that.
Really?
Sunny Amy.
Wow. Gosh, what an interesting career. She's still alive?
Yeah, God. Yeah.
Wow.
Lives on the Kapiti Coast out north of Wellington.
So,
yeah.
Is this the first verbatim play you've ever done, Barry Ninja?
No.
I've done other. Oh, sorry, Kings in the Margarine. Sorry, yeah.
We did another one, Belonging, with Kilimoku Productions. Belonging was around immigration stories. Same thing. We toured that. We did a national tour of Belonging, and there was another one. There's another one I've done. I forgot what it is. But we're working on a like Put Up and Shut Up's like a verbatim musical. So we're working on a feature film at the moment that's based around that is verbatim. Have you seen London Road?
No.
Oh, you must all see London Road.
Is that a movie?
It's a movie, yeah. Verbatim movie. It's about 10 years old, I think.
Where was
8 years
made?
Old.
It
was made in UK, set in Epping, Essex, about a street called London Road. Anyway, if you...
And it's verbatim. It's a verbatim film.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, interesting.
Mm. It's got Tom Hardy in it, too.
Oh, I don't know why I haven't heard of it.
Coleman,
yeah. Okay, great. So you're going to come back in. Well, Poppy and Sarah from Put Up and Shut Up are coming in.
Maybe.
On Thursday.
Yeah, two may be enough voices, but...
We've only got two mics, so if you can all gather around a mic, that's fine. So just one more time, to remind you when the show's on. It's not until the second week of Fringe, Thursday the 13th. Two shows that day, one at 12, one at 6, and Friday the 14th. At 5:30, so yeah, which has got a New Zealand Sign Language interpreter. So look forward to seeing you there. You can go on our website, Whangarei Fringe, and .co.nz, and the link to the Event Finder ticket page is on there. So I guess that's us, Julie Edwards. Thanks so much for coming in. It's been great to have a kōrero with you, and hopefully the rain has stopped. For Hati Mihati's. I think it's going to be all acoustic today because they don't want to have any electric cables out.
Oh.
But that's okay. I'm sure it'll be fun. And thanks for coming in, and we look forward to the show. I'm definitely a convert to verbatim theatre. I guess what's the most famous verbatim theatre play? Is it probably the Vagina Monologues?
Yep.
Is that probably the most famous one?
With Miranda.
Although
that's different type. There's all sorts.
Yeah, so there are lots of different types of verbatim. So it's a whole world, you know, a whole new world. But look forward to it.
Kia ora.
Thanks for coming in. Kia ora, that was Through the Lens by The Fullers. That's on my Baroque Pop with Indie Sensibilities playlist. And happy to welcome Tim Mulcair into the studio. I found him loitering at the Town Basin, and he's just had a slap-up breakfast and a good strong coffee, so hopefully he's on form. So Tim, what did you see yesterday that really got you going?
What I thought I'd do was, I think, just give you my impressions of opening day.
Yeah, go on then.
Yeah. So, like, if I'm sort of painting a scene, it's more of a, definitely an impressionist rather than a realist sort of painting.
Right, okay, well.
Maybe a little bit of surrealism.
A bit of surrealism, right, okay.
So, yeah, I, yes, it was a dark and stormy night.
Yeah.
And it was great. We went out there, and I realised I probably hadn't been out and about since the first one.
Since the first Fringe.
Oh, yeah, so which is brilliant.
You did a lot of the first Fringe?
Yeah, well, not a lot, but we had a good time.
Mm.
And, you know, so I guess I was quite excited.
To be going out again?
Yeah, it was.
So that was 2 years ago, Tim.
Yeah, I know, it's terrible.
I know.
It's a bit rusty. Yeah, I was a bit rusty.
A bit rusty on your going out skills.
Yeah, I was. And it didn't help that I was just starting a 24-day holiday. So
that must have been a terrible pressure.
Well, the thing is, I can get a little bit enthusiastic at times. And, I think it was just one of those evenings where I was, my enthusiasm might have gotten away with me a little bit. So if you're looking for negative reviews, you're not going to get them from me. And if you're looking for specifics, as I say, it's more impressions.
Okay. Well, let's try and nail you down a little bit.
6:30, we went to the Comedy Showcase.
You're talking about Friday?
Yeah, that's
Friday opening night.
I'm not going to do last night.
Okay. Last night, lost forever.
Look, I wouldn't say I was as enthusiastic. So
right, no, okay.
Definitely opening night.
Okay, yeah. Opening night. So you went to the Comedy Showcase. Well, yep. What were the standouts there?
Well, yeah. Well,
to keep trying to pin you down.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I prefer, as I say, impressions, I think.
Okay.
If you start pointing the finger, then other people kind of go, well, you know, what about me? So, look, there was entertainment all around, I'd say.
Yep.
And maybe that is an indication of the level of entertainment. If you can come out of it and go, what the hell was I laughing about, you know, then it was all pretty good.
Well, we kind of were talking about how ephemeral comedy is, so it's quite hard to...
Oh, you know, that was totally...
It's not life-changing, is it? You just go along and it's the moment.
It is in the moment, yeah. And, look, all of them are good.
Yeah.
They're all quite different.
And I think you went on to see Dr. Violet Burns after that.
Well, yeah, but we had a little... So, yeah, just again, we had... because I had to prepare for a Comedy Showcase, so I was quite prepared adequately. And then I had to go, I wanted to get a feed, and nothing was open.
Nothing was open on Friday night?
Downtown.
In Whangarei?
Yeah. It was franchised, but I didn't want to eat that stuff. So when we were going to the Octagon, so long and short it was, I didn't have anything to eat. So,
Things could quite easily...
Well, they did, and the only thing they had at the Octagon worth consuming was, it was more beers, so... it was interesting, though. We got a very warm, very effusive welcome when we rocked up.
To the Octagon?
Yeah.
Oh, that's
it's
nice.
It's like going to someone's house, really.
Yeah, sort of like going to someone's house in 1970.
Yeah.
Which is...
Yeah, it was kind of like... It was, there was a bit of a time warp thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was partly, I think, welcoming because we were the first to get there. And, apart from another two groups of two, that was about us.
Mm.
So yeah, it was kind of... it was...
And what do you remember of the show?
Oh, look, the guy was great. No, he was great. He greeted us when we got there too. The thing was, there was this fellow who's just sort of kind of nondescript, and I did see he had a microphone, so I should have been paying attention. But then this other guy turns up front, and nothing like him.
With the red sunglasses, prosthetic teeth.
The guy's, he was in character for the whole time, and there's only six of us. So it was pretty hard, but he kept it going.
Yeah.
And, it was, the power to change your mind. If you were going there to be motivated, I think, you might have been. It was more confusional than motivational, if the subject was confusional.
Yeah, definitely. I think that was what he was out to do, was lead you up a path and then run away from you kind of thing.
That's right. So, again, without being too specific, it was, I'm glad I went.
Yeah.
And I just think... everyone just needs to get out there.
Yeah.
And look, it's just cheap as chips.
Yep.
And it's all going to a good cause.
That guy, Kim Potter, who does that show, Power to Change Your Mind, he lives in the Wairarapa, and he's come up here to do two shows.
Yeah.
Well, one there was about seven people, and the other one there was about 25 last night when I went.
And not even a petrol money, you know what I mean? So.
Probably not. So people are doing it for love. But I guess, if you're in an audience of 25 at a Fringe event, then that's a reasonable audience, I think that's the main struggle of this event, is getting people to understand that it is cheap as chips, as you're saying. Yeah. They're not charging top dollar. And a guy we spoke to yesterday said they could have gone $20, $25, but they went $15, $10, $15. because they want to build an audience here. So they want, you know, they want exposure and they want to talk to people.
Yeah. And look, I think by and large we were a good audience. You know, a show I went to last night wasn't my cup of tea.
No.
But there were plenty of people getting into it.
Yeah.
So, you know.
It's hit and miss. And at the end of the day, if it's not your cup of tea, you just walk. Yeah. It's not like you had to go to Auckland to see it.
No, that's right.
So I think we're in that curious situation where we're spoiled for choice briefly.
Yeah, that's right.
And it'll be back to just slim pickings for the next 2 years.
You know, and that is the thing. We've essentially got 2 weeks where if I want to go out, I'll go out and there'll be something that'll entertain me.
Mm.
And there's no question. There is quantity of entertainment out there. Mm. And, yep, just got to go and check it out.
Cool. All right. Well, thanks for your thoughts, Tim. And we will chuck something else from the Baroque Pop with Indie Sensibilities playlist. This is an Arctic Monkeys track, and I know you're a fan. Thanks for coming in. Kia ora, welcome back to Fringe Radio. I'm Damien, and I hope you're getting the hang of Baroque pop with indie sensibilities. That was, I hope, There Better Be a Mirror Ball by the Arctic Monkeys. So we just had a great chat with Julie Edwards from Barrier Ninja, a verbatim play about Ho Water. And as always, once you meet the performer and hear about the show, it makes it that much more interesting, and you're more motivated to go. So hopefully we'll get a good audience for that show. I wasn't sure about verbatim theatre myself. I thought it sounded, I don't know, it just didn't sound very theatrical or very dramatic. You know, there didn't sound that it was going to be a lot of conflict and drama and all that sort of stuff that's supposed to be the staple of entertainment. But I think once you understand the format of the show, it's actually incredibly moving to hear the words of real people sort of put together like that. So at 10:30, we've got Whitney coming in to talk to us about her show. Whitney Channings, her show is called Songs from My Suitcase. And if you go to the Whangarei Fringe website, whangareifringe.co.nz, you can find out the performance dates and times. And there's a very bright and almost overwhelming picture of, I presume it's Channing, with some doves and some ukuleles and some maps of the world, which is quite an arresting image. And anyway, so she'll be in at 10:30, and we've got Gavin Hewitson from Elevator Comedy, and I believe his offsider called Thomas possibly is coming in with him at 11 o'clock. So we'll look forward to meeting them. And just wrapping up our review of yesterday, I heard that the Human Library was a very successful event from Verena, who organized it. And then Anders did a couple of performances of Back to Square One. I managed to make it to the 2 o'clock show. I've already had a bit of a talk about that. And Lisa and Jasper went to Colors of the Voice open level workshop with Tui. Tui Mamaki, I believe her name is. And apparently that was a great experience as well, very enjoyable. And then I had a chat with Stephen Lyons yesterday about his Josiah and Stephen's Joyous Comedy Hour, which took place at 5 o'clock at Fringe before dark. It was strictly then, but it was raining quite hard, so they probably didn't mind. And Kate's just arrived with a very delicious long black coffee that will dramatically improve my radio performance. Thank you, Kate. And then, so Elevator Comedy performed yesterday, and they're also on tonight. I think their last show is at 6:30 p.m. And then there was another performance of To Be Frank at the Octagon Theatre, and I had a chat with Michael and Sten afterwards. Sten's a musician, and Michael's the performer. And Michael said that it was a dramatically different show from the previous night. I think there was a bigger audience, and I think the audience engagement and sort of response is quite an important part of that show. So I think that probably helped them, but also he said it was just about being, you know, more familiar with the space and all those sorts of things. So so anyway, I'm glad that they had a good audience for that night, and they had a good final show, and Michael and Sten were very happy with the review that Lena Francham wrote for them, and so they should be, because it was a very good review, a very fair and encouraging and appreciative review that really showed that Lena, I think, understood what they were trying to do and that they pretty much achieved it. Okay, and then there was Jungle Fever. I haven't heard from anyone whether Jungle Fever went off or not. I think it might have been a bit hampered by the weather, because it basically didn't stop raining all day yesterday. But it'd be good to hear from someone who went to Jungle Fever. And then I managed to, make it to The Power to Change Your Mind at 8 o'clock at the Octagon Theatre last night. And it was interesting having interviewed Dr. Vinyl Burns here in the studio on Friday morning. Spending an hour in his company was challenging, definitely not for the easily confused or the impressionable. And he's quite slyly sort of subversive, the way he's doing sort of satirizing and parodying the sort of snake oil merchants, and there's plenty of them out there in various domains of life, politics, religion, and of course the internet. I enjoyed the show. It was, you know, you're desperately trying to hold on to something, and I guess it's really sort of a form of stand-up comedy, really, that it's sort of had these little moments, and then he would, you know, there were jokes with punchlines, and ended up with this levitating a table, which was quite bizarre. I mean, the whole show was bizarre, just looking at the guy. He's wearing this disturbing wig and these prosthetic teeth and these red sunglasses and speaking in an American accent. So that was great, and he had a really reasonably decent audience as well. I haven't heard from anyone who saw Bondage Queen Sings the Hits. I'd love to know how that was. And then a bunch of us were down at Fringe After Dark for Misanthropy, a pageant for the people of Earth, performed by Laura Yakas. And she's quite a performer. She's very sort of energetic, and she's obviously a very sort of intelligent, engaged person in the world. And wow, her songs, she sort of went in and out of songs and sort of diatribes, rants, conversations about all sorts of things. And yeah, that was, like Tim said, there was an audience there who were very engaged, and it's great that there's an audience for pretty much everything. I'm not sure that Tim and I were really the audience that Laura was after or cared about, and that's fine too. So yeah, I think that's the thing about Fringe, is you've got to go with an open mind, and you're not paying a lot of money, so if the show isn't really your cup of tea, then, you know, that's okay. You haven't broken the bank to get there. So then let's get back to some Baroque pop while I drink my long black and let it take effect. And of course, no Baroque pop with indie sensibilities playlist would be complete without the Fleet Foxes. And I've been into the Fleet Foxes for a long, long time, and what's not to like? So here's Your Protector. Of course, that wasn't the Fleet Foxes. I faded up the wrong thing on the mixer. That was something off the playlist. Sorry, I should probably have let it play out, but I was a little bit confused. So here we go with Your Protector.
She left a week to roam, your protector's coming home. Keep your secrets with you, girl, safe from the outside. You walk along the stream, your head caught in a waking dream. Your protector.
was Your Protector by the Fleet Foxes. So I thought I'd... There are a couple of events that are running now, which I thought I should draw your attention to. Starting at 10 o'clock this morning is the... I guess this is how you pronounce this word, sexagesimal, I think, celebration at Clapham's Clock. I think that's the only time the word sex would be used in the association with Clapham's Clocks. It's the 60th, I think it means the 60th celebration or the 60th anniversary of something. Sex as in six. And it's at the town, it's in the town basin at the National Clock Museum. Started at 10 o'clock and runs until 2 o'clock. It says, the event description says, join us for a 60th celebration of all things time and clocks. And there's a bunch of people, I'm not really sure who they are, who are very pro clocks. There's an incredibly baroque new clock down there, which is the ball clock, which I'm sure you've seen. Unfortunately, it's off bounds at the moment because they're resurfacing the area around it. But there are some people who are into clocks in this town, and this is 2 days of family-friendly fun, so today and next Saturday. Family-friendly fun in the town basin. Try our slow-motion photo booth, get your face painted like a clock, learn a few tricks from the time travelers and circus performers. Okay. The museum will be open, and you can get a family ticket for $20, but I think the event itself is free, the sexagesimal celebration at Clapham's Clock Museum. So that's currently running. And also happening at the moment is the Landing in Whangarei Multicultural Storytelling Tour. And I think the idea with this is that you go online to www.landinginwhangarei, all one word, .co.nz. And it's a multicultural storytelling project celebrating the personal stories of individuals and groups who have been on a journey to call Whangarei home. Take the digital tour using your personal devices to see Whangarei through the diverse lens of your neighbours. So the link is on their event finder page. So if you go to whangareifringe.co.nz okay, I should have clicked on that link before I started talking about it. Because if you click on that link, it says, although it was desirable to participate in our wonderful local Fringe Festival this year, this project's public gallery launch has been delayed in the interest of quality and care for all participants. Disregard the 2nd of October date and join our mailing list for the new official launch date announcement. Okay, so that's a bit of a disappointment, but never mind. At least you find that out fairly quickly before you've gone anywhere. So it's an online thing anyway. So it's been postponed. Okay, Hearty Me Hearties has not been postponed, luckily, even though the weather's a bit dodgy. And Chris Foote, who's a Beagle Radio DJ, just dropped by and told me that Thelonious Punk are playing down at the Beagle stage down at Pūtahi Park, which is the new little amphitheatre area by the Canopy Bridge. They're playing at 12. They're a funky jazz trio, maybe. And the Panimals are also playing throughout the morning. So the Panimals is a steel band, apparently. And there's lots of other things going on down there, all sorts of little workshops and fun things to do. And then there's the parade as well, which kicks off at 11:30. So get down there and enjoy. And there'll be people thrusting flyers into your hands, including for the show that I'm involved with, which is called Like Sex, which opens this week on Wednesday night at the Octagon Theatre, 8 p.m. And hopefully some actors from the show will be coming in to talk about that on a future show, maybe on Wednesday morning. So Hearty Me Hearties is going to kick off in about an hour. And then let's have some more music and get ready for Whitney Channings, who's coming in to talk to us about her show, which is called Songs From My Suitcase. She'll be here in a quarter of an hour. So let's find something else on this playlist. Baroque pop with indie sensibilities. You'd probably expect to see Knights in White Satin on there, but let's listen to something, maybe some Beatles. This is called In My Life, and it's from Rubber Soul.
There are
Was the Pile Driver Waltz by Alex Turner, who I'm almost certain is the front man for the Arctic Monkeys. Very distinctive voice. Okay, so it's pouring. Don't let that put you off. I'm sure it will have stopped by the time Hearty Me Hearty starts. And let's not let the weather ruin rain on our parade, literally. Maybe I should play that song. Or maybe that would be tempting fate. Okay, so Back to Square One is on at 2 p.m. this afternoon at the Hihiawa Cultural Center, which is a nice venue for that show. It's got a nice flat concrete floor that you can draw on, and Anders certainly uses a lot of chalk to tell the story. And we saw them cleaning the chalk off with Coke, which was an unknown application of Coke, but I'm sure there's a reason for that. So that's the last show of Back to Square One, and if you're not sure about whether you'd like it or not, go online and read Penny Fitt's very good, well-written, clear review on theatreview.org.nz. Just type in Back to Square One and it'll come up. At 5:30 p.m. we've got Intangential 2, which is hard to describe, I think, but and I tried to get Pete and Matt to describe it when they came in. An eclectic mix of internationally published multi-genre poets and supporting musicians who met on the edges of street corners and gossip groups before coalescing into a fusion of diversity. We are serious and not so. If you thought you knew who we were, think again. I think maybe they should get together with Dr. Vinyl Burns and perfect their, I don't know what you'd call it, but it's certainly, they're certainly not willing to be pinned down, bit like Dr. Burns. That's on at 5:30 here at 116, and it's just one. It's a one-off, so if you miss it, you miss it. There's five performers, and I think it will be interesting. And it's only $5 to get in, so you know you've got no excuse really on a day like this. 5:30 p.m. What else are you going to be doing? And then at 6:30 we've got Elevator Comedy, and Gavin and Thomas are coming in at 11 a.m. to talk about that. And then at 7:30 p.m. Open Up Your Heart is a show with Brian Baker, featuring Brian Baker on guitar, and he's got an experimental vocalist, Inora Flowers, it's capital I, capital N, O-R-A, Flowers, sings and raps in Lithuanian. This mashup of fringy, intriguing genres from Northland artists will lift you from your seats. Wow. Okay, that's at 116 tonight, 7:30 till 10 p.m, and the tickets are $20 or $15. So again, good value for a show that runs for 2.5 hours. Sounds great. Look forward to seeing you there. All right, so I've had a message from Whitney. She's on her way, but there's roadworks on in Otaika, so she might be a little late. So let's have some... I guess this is a classic Baroque pop tune, and one that I still love. Lana Del Rey.
You like the beggars' line. do.
Welcome back to Fringe Radio. I'm Damien. We're halfway through the show. It's 10:30 and we'll be going till 12. And so far we've had a bit of a review of some of the shows that were all of the shows that were on yesterday. And had a nice bit of feedback from Lisa, who went to the voice workshop with Tui. And I'll just read out what she said. She's a great teacher. She made Jasper, who's 12, feel really welcome. The whole class felt welcome. We loved it and sang most of the way home. She used colours and images like a skeleton. I'm not really sure what that means, but it sounds interesting. And there's two more workshops in the series, and Tui's also doing a solo show on Sunday. That was great. Great to hear that someone had a great time at a workshop, singing workshop. And now we're pleased to welcome Whitney Channings.
Yes.
Channings, I got that right. Who has just come here in challenging circumstances from Waipu. The road was closed. Roadworks, I guess, was it? Or,
yeah, it looked like power lines.
Oh, right. Okay. And it's pretty wet out there.
It sure is.
Yeah. So hopefully, hearty me hearties, it will have stopped and the sun will have come out by 11 o'clock. Because the only way to deal with this is optimism and an umbrella and some waterproofs.
Absolutely.
Okay. So, Whitney, you're just doing one show. Next Saturday,
yeah,
here at 116.
One show at 116 at 1 PM next Saturday, and one show at Octagon Theatre 6:30 PM.
Oh,
so two shows only.
Two separate events.
Yeah. Two shows, two locations.
Great. So on the same day.
Yeah.
Great.
It's going to be a big one.
Yeah. So how long have you been a performer?
I've been a performer since I was a kid, actually, growing up in Whangarei.
Oh.
Or, yeah.
Where did you... So you grew up in Whangarei?
Like I grew up here? In Mangatapiri and Mangawhai.
So where did you go to school?
It was Mangatapiri Primary, Mangawhai Beach School, and then Otamatea.
Oh, okay.
So...
Great. So was musical was a part of your... thing
always.
At high school?
Yeah, I was really lucky with the awesome arts community in Whangarei.
Right.
Had some fantastic local teachers and was involved with Whangarei Theatre Company and Opera North.
What shows did you do with Whangarei Theatre Company?
I did Cats back in, I think it was 2008, mm-hmm. And also later on Otamatea Repertory Theatre Company.
Oh,
did Fiddler on the Roof with them and The Sound of Music.
Where do they put their shows on?
They're based in Mangatiroto, so down...
Yeah. What's the venue called? Is it the...
It's the Otamatea Repertory Theatre.
Which is near the school, isn't it?
Yeah. Yep. Right across the road from the school. But all those communities are interwoven, and it's a really great, regional family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. I see. So when did you leave? When did you finish school?
Well, I took off in 2011 down to Christchurch to NASDA, there's been a couple of students from Whangarei over the years. It's the National Academy of Singing and Dramatic Arts,
right?
A musical theatre degree.
Right.
And
that's a degree?
Yeah.
Musical theatre?
Bachelor degree in musical theatre.
Right. And what was that like? What was NASDA like?
Amazing.
Yeah.
I recommend further study like that for anyone who's interested in that field.
So is it also training or is it study? So it's training.
It's training, So it was through the Polytech. So it's a degree, but it's very much a practical based course.
Right.
So our papers were dance, drama, acting, singing, theatre studies, and performance.
Right.
So it was the best 3 years. It was so fun.
Wow. Because you hear a lot about Toi Whakaari, but you don't, I guess, I don't know why it's South Island or what? Is it still going strong, NASDA? Is it still called NASDA?
Yep, still called NASDA, and still going strong, still producing amazing graduates that are working all over the world.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Are you still in touch with some of them?
Yeah, still in touch with some of them.
What kinds of things are they up to?
Oh, goodness. Well, one guy, Adam Spedding, I think he's just had a musical on musical reading on Broadway, I believe. And
a musical that he's...
A musical theatre writer.
Right.
And there's a couple of people producing their own original works down in Christchurch.
Right.
So,
So what? Yeah. What? So do you make your living as a performer? Is that your thing? Is it like?
I do my best, yeah.
What are some of the things you've done since you finished at NASDA? Like?
So I spent a couple of years in Wellington with the National Theatre for Children, capital E.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and they work quite closely with a lot of Toi Whakaari grads. Mm-hmm. And we did two national tours, which did come up to Whangarei to Forum North. Right. We did Mr. McGee and the Biting Flea in 2014. Right. And
who's that by?
That was a book by Pamela Allen.
That's right.
A Kiwi author, but she actually became really, really well known in Australia. And that's where the show was initially created.
Right.
And then brought back here.
So what was your, were you acting and singing and
acting,
doing the whole thing?
Singing, dancing. The following year we did puppeteering in Kiwi Moon.
Right.
So that was about the birds, and that was a musical again.
About New Zealand birds?
Yeah, based on another picture book, Kiwi Moon by Gavin Bishop.
Yeah, I think I know that one. Yeah.
Really beautiful shows. I highly recommend to get along to those when they do come up. And then, after...
Wow. Are they still... Capital E still does that sort of stuff? Like it
absolutely.
Sort of shows nationally?
Yeah, they do come up here. They go up to Kirikiri, Kaitaia, and all the way down to Invercargill.
Right.
So, yeah.
So you did a couple of seasons with them?
Yeah, a couple of seasons. And then after that, I ended up going over to the UK to do the classic OE.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily got in before COVID.
Right. So you spent most of... the pandemic in England, did you?
No, luckily got a clear run pre-pandemic.
Oh, I see.
Two-year visa.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And so where did you live in England?
Spent a summer season in Cornwall in a caravan, which was pretty cool, and then did a big road trip around Western Europe, followed by 18 months in London working on the South Bank as an actor.
Really?
At two of London's big immersive theatre attractions.
What are they?
They're called Shrek's Adventure and the London Dungeon.
Oh, and they're on the South Bank, so they're like a sort of, you go in and pay to go in and have a immersive, what do you call it, immersive theatre experience?
Yeah, they're inside a big, huge building called County Hall.
Mm.
It sits beside the London Eye and opposite Westminster.
Right.
So it was a pretty beautiful location to go to work every day, and I had to pinch myself that I was really there.
Yeah.
It was so iconic, and now every time I see a movie with those vistas over the river, I'm like, there's my work.
Wow. So was that... lucky that you managed to land that? It sounds like, what was the process for getting involved in that?
Yeah, it was very similar to other acting work here. It is competitive. You know, you find the casting brief, you read through it, learn the segments of the script or the songs, and then you go along with other actors and audition. And it just involves, doing the scene, singing a song, maybe a bit of improvisation. They want to see that you can take direction.
Right.
And they might give you some notes, tweak the character this way, try this. And if you're adaptable and follow those instructions, then, you're in with a good shot.
Great. So that kind of, you could make a living doing that in London and lived in London for 18 months?
Gosh, yeah. Mm. Yeah, it's a huge industry over there compared to here.
Right.
And I guess it goes both ways. There's a lot more work, but there's a lot more competition. They both have their drawbacks, their pros and cons. So you come back here and there's a lot less infrastructure for the arts industry, but there's, so many... it's a smaller community, so there's different avenues. You can get to know everyone.
Yeah.
You can make your mark.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have to be more willing or prepared to make your own work as well? Like, do your own stuff here?
Absolutely. I've found it quite interesting to compare. I think in New Zealand, you tend to be a jack of all trades.
Right.
No one really specialises. You tend to do, you write songs, you write scripts, you dance, you sing, you play instruments, you produce. Whereas in the UK, people will say, I'm a dancer, I'm a jazz dancer.
Right.
This is my thing.
Right.
And do that one thing to a really high level.
Right.
And I was like, oh my gosh, what else do you do? And they're like, no, I'm a jazz dancer. I'm like, whoa. Oh. It's just a different way of working.
Right. So if you could be that one thing, what would you be?
Oh my goodness. I think a musical theatre performer would be my thing. So I guess there's two types. There's the more dance ones, and then there's the singer-actor. So I think a singer-actor on a big musical would be my dream. Yeah.
Right. So what production have you done that's the closest to that? Like, would you say, where you're living the dream?
Oh, gosh. I don't know if I've ever done anything on that scale myself.
Right.
Not in my professional career.
Right. Is that a hard industry to get into? Or
extremely.
Is it?
Yeah, and that's kind of brings me back to Songs From My Suitcase.
Right.
So musical theatre is very cookie cutter. You have to fit the exact mould because you're trying to fit into a character that's been played by many other people, and they have a very specific image of how they want it to be.
And the audience is also very familiar with that character.
Yeah, they are. And I think the biggest thing is you're competing against, you know, 50 actors who could all do it. And they just have to pick one.
Yeah.
So it's not any reflection on you or the other candidates. It's just, it's so oversaturated, you know, with amazing talent.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that puts you into producing your own work. So I kind of thought, well, you know, rather than waiting around for an acting role, I'm just going to make my own. And I started to put together the songs that I'd written while I was traveling and the funny stories that had happened. And then when COVID happened, it gave me more fuel to throw on the fire and get the show written. And I think everyone can relate because that's what it's about. It's about those twists and turns.
I see. So that's the sort of theme or the subject matter of the story, like life being unpredictable, that kind of
thing. So strangely, when we got back from traveling, I got a role as a travel agent. It was my first ever 9 to 5. I think I just
where was this in, back in London,
back in New Zealand, actually in South Auckland at that point, in Papakura, of all places. I just needed a bit of money after all that travelling.
Sure.
Kind of craving a bit of stability, I guess, at that point.
Yeah.
But after 18 months, we had the pandemic. I was made redundant, and I just thought, oh, well, the 9 to 5 thing didn't work out. I guess I'll go back to the, you know, job security of the theatre industry.
So the songs from my suitcase is sort of like a sounds like a collection of songs. Is there any, is it just songs, or is there talking as well? Is there dialogue as well?
I've kind of stripped my favourite genre of musical theatre down to its little small scale form. It's a musical. So there's a narrative, there's a few scenes, and they're woven together by the songs, which tell the story. So it is like a musical, but it's just a one-woman musical.
One-woman musical. And it's this outfit that you're wearing, the very bright and loud black and white, red and white striped tights and T-shirt. Is that the kind of, is that the character that you're playing?
Absolutely. Right. She's called Where's Whitney. It evolves from a game that I invented when we went travelling. I bought this Where's Wally outfit and I took it around the world with me and took photos in all the iconic locations, and my friends and family back home would have to guess where it was on Facebook.
I see.
And so there's a whole series of pictures that I've taken over the years. And while we were travelling, I also wrote songs about the experiences.
So these were iconic locations all around Europe?
Europe.
Put your outfit on.
Yeah, a little bit of Asia.
Right.
And maybe more to come as well.
Great. So the songs came out of that whole journey. You were writing songs the whole time?
Yeah.
All right. So what's the narrative, without giving too much away? What's the sort of, is it a woman on a tour?
Yeah. I think it's a story that we can all relate to. It's about a little girl who dreams of being a theatre performer, and she's got huge aspirations, you know, to win an Oscar and a Grammy and all that kind of thing. And then she starts off on her journey, and there's all kinds of twists and turns that happen along the way. And it's just capturing those moments, homesickness or, you know, dreaming of your future, all those different feelings that we all experience as we go through life.
So does she grow up through the course of the show? Is it sort of like a coming of age?
Yeah, there's some present time and some flashbacks. It's a coming of age show and sort of stepping into the next phase of life.
So we haven't really talked about how many songs you're going to do, but how about we do a song now?
Yeah.
And then maybe have another chat afterwards and then do another song, and then it might be time to stop.
Absolutely,
You're going to Hearty Me Hearties to promote your show?
I am. So if you see Where's Whitney around town, come and say hi. Feel free to take a picture, and I'll have some flyers of the show. And you might even see some colouring in pages around the city where you can colour in Where's Whitney.
Awesome.
And take a picture, tag Songs From My Suitcase, and win some tickets to the show.
Wow. Okay, so what are you gonna perform for us first?
Today is first up is one of my favourite songs. It's called Saving the World. And I wrote it during the first lockdown that we had with COVID in March 2020. And I guess you'll find out what it's about. The lyrics speak for themselves,
okay.
I think.
Great. This is Whitney Channings and Saving the World.
Yes. Mary Anderson invented windscreen wipers, Edward Jenner the vaccine, Mary Sherman Morgan rocket fuel, Ben Franklin electricity, Richard Pierce invented the aeroplane, the Wright brothers did it too, Melita Benz the coffee filter, Thomas Crapper the flushing loo. Such noble contributions to our society. I just want to be on that list. Everybody look at me. I'm saving the world from the safety of my living room. Saving the world in my PJs, calling everyone on Zoom. Saving the world. I was born for this. It's my time to shine. Saving the world. It's COVID-19 quarantine time. Rutherford split the atom, Gandhi wanted world peace, Neil Armstrong walked on the moon, Jane Goodall lived with the chimpanzees, Kate Shepard got us the women's vote, Einstein developed physics, Rosa Parks campaigned for civil rights, Edmund Hillary climbed Mount Everest. Look at all the awesome things that people have achieved. Now we can all be part of it and go down in history. Saving the world from the safety of our living rooms. Saving the world in our PJs, calling everyone on Zoom. Saving the world, we were born for this. It's our time to shine. Saving the world. If we do it together, we will be fine. Be kind, stay home, save lives.
Wow, that's Whitney Channings and Saving the World. Sounds like an attempt to, and a successful attempt to put a positive spin on lockdown. I mean, I guess I've never thought of it as saving the world. You know, we all just had to sit around doing nothing. But so was it a productive time for you, lockdown? Was it sort of, how was it?
I would describe it as a roller coaster.
Yeah.
it had its wins and it had its very rough patches. And
right.
I think everyone probably experienced something similar.
Yeah.
You know, there were times when I was thinking, this is fine, everything's okay. You know, look at me, I've written a song, I'm so productive. And then there were times when I was probably just sitting on the floor having a cry.
Great. I don't know how many names you got into that song of famous people who did probably more dramatic things than just staying at home. Sounded well researched, and you know, it's cool that you could kind of reframe something, I guess, like a negative experience. And you know, a few of the shows, for example, Back to Square One, which I saw yesterday, have kind of sort of came out of the pandemic as well. Does your show reference the pandemic a lot, or is it just a passing thing? Or
it references it at times, it touches on it.
Mm.
It's very much a show that's come out of the pandemic. Mm. But it is the bigger picture. It sort of starts before the pandemic and and ends with that turbulent time as its sort of last chapter. Yeah.
Right.
And I think that's what kind of makes it universally relatable, I think. It's, you know, we've all felt different things at different times.
Mm.
Yeah.
And what about the ukulele, or as I was told once, it's ukulele.
Ukulele,
is
yeah.
Is probably how you're supposed to pronounce it. But is that a very versatile instrument for doing what you're doing?
So versatile, yeah. I think it's underrated, you know. The ukulele is such an expressive instrument, and you'll see in the show, often people think of it as quite a happy, like, laid-back instrument.
Yeah.
But I think you can you can sing any genre with the ukulele.
Right.
And you can bring a bit of drama as well, and maybe even a bit of tragedy.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be interesting. Because, yeah, I do think of it as a cheerful instrument.
Like, yeah.
It's just sort of, there's something about its tone that, and it's nice and small, so nice and compact.
Yeah.
Is that what you were traveling around the world with?
This exact ukulele has right. been all around the world. I think wow. this ukulele has been to 25 countries.
Wow.
Mm,
and did
with
you
me?
Did you busk when you were there? Did you get it out and play to the people?
Believe it or not, I actually didn't. I just jammed and wrote my songs.
Right.
I did play, you know, on the beach or in the fields, just sort of mostly by myself, really. The right. idea of busking for those big crowds in Europe was quite a daunting one.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. So in the show, how many songs are there? Is it mostly singing, or is it a bit of both?
It is mostly singing, mm. yeah. There are 10 songs.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
In the hour, it's a one-hour show.
Yeah.
So it is right. mostly music.
And where else have you performed it so far?
So its premiere was Whangarei at the very first Whangarei Fringe in 2020.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Right, you were here then. I missed that one completely.
Oh.
But so, and since then, have you performed it elsewhere?
Yeah, so it had its second season in 2021 at the Auckland Fringe.
Right.
And I've just done its third season at the 2022 Auckland Fringe.
Right.
So this is my first time doing two seasons in 1 year.
Wow.
Yeah.
Cool. So tell us about your experience with fringes. What's Auckland Fringe like?
Yeah, Fringe is fantastic. I highly recommend, whether you're a performer who's thinking about, you know, trying to make your own work,
mm-hmm.
or whether you're an audience member, just get out and see what's on, because mm-hmm. it's just an amazing atmosphere. All these amazing artists come from all over New Zealand and overseas, and it's really affordable, you
yeah.
know. There's so many events that are free,
yeah.
or, you know, just give what you can.
Yeah.
And there's often lineups in the same venue. You can see a few shows,
mm.
so you don't need to worry about running around and finding parking. You can just
yeah.
relax and just see what's happening.
Yeah, and in a town like this, you can easily walk between venues, you know. It's
yeah.
not that challenging. And sometimes, you know, you're in the fringe audience and there's only you look around, there's like a handful of people,
yeah.
and that's a sort of fringe experience as well. And, you know, so what's been a highlight for you of a fringe?
Oh gosh,
what would you say was like a peak moment?
Yeah, fringe is full of hidden gems. it actually started, I think the Edinburgh Fringe was the first ever fringe festival, and this has taken off all over the world now.
Mm.
I was lucky enough to experience the Edinburgh Fringe, and even though this was overseas, there was one thing that stood out to me. I saw a musical called Six, about the six wives of Henry VIII, and it was performed by some university students. They weren't professional performers, but they were very, very good.
Mm.
And wow, the songs were so well written.
Did they write them?
There was a songwriter who'd written the show.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't performing, but he wrote these incredible songs. And I thought, wow, that really stood out with just amazing music. And when I came back to New Zealand, I saw that the show had been picked up to go on the West End. And from there, it got picked up to go on Broadway. So
wow.
now it's produced in these big Broadway theatres. It's got an American audience and it's professionally performed.
So you saw it kind of at its beginning?
I saw it at its infancy.
Wow.
And that's what I love about Fringe. You know, ideas can start small and they
yeah.
can grow. And you just get out and see as much as you can, because you could be seeing the next big thing.
Wow, that's cool. Yeah, that's really inspiring. It's good to hear stories like that, because I guess a lot of shows never go beyond Fringe, and that's just
yeah.
the way it goes. But something that's really got... Is there anything that you're really looking forward to seeing this Fringe? Have you had a chance to look through the program and pick
yeah.
anything?
Oh gosh, there's so many awesome ones. I'm really hoping to get out and see Alone.
Yeah.
Mm,
yeah.
That's some friends of mine from Auckland are producing that, and they've just come back from the Sydney Fringe.
Oh.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
That sounds like an interesting show. It's got David Bowie and
yeah.
space travel, and it sounds really interesting.
It does sound interesting, and I don't know much about it. Yeah.
Right.
It's a mysterious
yeah.
show.
Okay, well, let's my next guests have arrived, so let's wrap this up with can we do another song?
Absolutely, yeah.
Cool. Which, tell us about the song.
This song is, I would call it a pop party song. It's called Windows Down, and this is kind of one of my travel highlight songs. I wrote it actually once I was back in New Zealand, just sort of reminiscing about the road trips and the, you know, the warm, balmy days. And
so I'm imagining driving along in a car with the windows down. Is it that kind of
absolutely. We were driving around Spain in this absolute wreck of a car. That was all we could afford.
Yeah.
We actually stopped at a mechanic and she begged us not to drive all the way back to the UK in that car.
Really? Not
safe. She didn't think we'd make it back.
Oh.
She said, please call me when you make it back. Because she lifted the car up and it was just spongy underneath with rust. You could practically put your finger through.
Who were you travelling with? Who was your travelling companion?
It was me and my partner.
Right.
And yeah, he's been my Wes Whitney photographer over the years.
Right.
Yeah. He's a very tolerant man of me wearing crazy outfits in public and making him take photos of me. So
is he a performer himself? Or?
No, not at all. We have very opposite interests. He's into surfing and yes, he's more the sports guy and I'm the arts lady. So we compliment.
So you did that trip together and that was great. And so this song's called Windows Down.
Windows Down.
Whitney Channings.
Like a mirage from that long dusty road. Where were we going? We didn't even know. But it didn't matter which road that we chose. I closed my eyes and I'm back there again. Old rusty car and the wind in my hair. We'd roll the windows down. Fiesta. I still remember the heat as it rose, like a mirage from that long dusty road. Sun in my eyes and the sand between my toes. Those are the moments that I miss the most. I close my eyes and I'm back there again. Glass of sangria, ice cold in my hands. We'd roll the windows down, we'd say hola, hola, hola. Windows down, we'd say hola, hola, hola. Windows down, we'd say vamos a la playa. Windows down. I dream I'm back by the ocean, and I know one day we'll be back there again. We'd roll the windows down, we'd say hola, hola, hola. Windows down, we'd say hola, hola, hola. Windows down.
Great. Oh, that's Whitney Channings and Windows Down. And it really evoked Spain for me. I've been there as well. And just something about Spain, isn't it? Especially in the summer. I did a lot of hitchhiking there, and the Spanish people were just so enjoyable to you jump in the car, and I had some interesting times. So that was great. All right, so let's just give your show a plug one more time. So it's two shows on Saturday, the 8th of October, next Saturday. One at 1 o'clock and one at 6:30, both at 116.
One at 116.
Sorry.
And one at the Octagon Theatre.
Right.
Yeah.
Great. And the tickets are $15 concession, $20 full price. And you can, if you go to the whangarei fringe.co.nz, search up songs from my suitcase and click on the on the tile. It'll take you to the Event Finder page where you can buy tickets. And it's been really great meeting you, Whitney. Thanks for coming in. Really enjoyed the songs. And I'm going to go all out to see your show. And
thanks so much for having me.
I hope you have a good time down at Hearty Me Hearties. And, yeah, good luck for the future.
Thank you. All right. A bit of rain can't dampen my spirits.
Awesome. Okay, so we'll get back into my Baroque pop playlist with a quick song from the Beach Boys, classic Baroque pop exponents, and then we've got Gavin and Thomas coming in for a conversation next.
But long as there are stars above you, you never need to doubt it. I'll make you so sure about it. God only knows what I'd be without you. If you should ever leave me, well, life would still go on, believe me. Show nothing to me, so what good would living do me? God only knows what I'd be without you.
Welcome back. This is Fringe Radio. I'm Damien, and that was God Only Knows by the Beatles. And I'm very pleased to welcome now into the studio Gavin and Thomas, who are the performers from Elevator Comedy.
Yes.
How long have you guys been working together?
Oh, 2 nights. And
yeah. I see.
But we've known each other for like a really long time, just doing stand-up together.
Right.
And I was like, this guy's terrible. Let's do a show.
This guy is around.
Makes you look good if he's terrible. Is that the way it works?
You'd think so.
I'm going to be opening up, and then he's like, "I got to save this gig now."
Oh, I see. Right. Yeah. So do you do a separate piece each, or how does it work? Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Each half an hour.
Yeah, okay. Just each half an hour. Straight stand up comedy. Just making some jokes.
Right.
Yeah, I mean that's pretty much stand up off the wall, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So where have you been kind of working? Like, where did you get to know each other?
Auckland mainly.
Yeah.
He's been doing gigs like up and down the country for a while. I've just been in Auckland basically.
Right.
And then just going to Hamilton and here, and we're like, oh, that goes. Want to do a show?
Right.
And that's how it happened. Yeah.
There was. Yeah, we just, no real planning to the whole thing.
And being a stand up comedian, you know. Really, you don't have a lot of sort of like, it's probably logistically quite easy to do stuff like that. Like, it's just basically just you and a microphone,
Yeah,
that's the.
It's pretty much, and sometimes an audience, you hope. Yeah. But I've done.
That's why we're here.
Yeah.
We've got two of the three things. We just need the third.
Yeah, it's
stand up's one of those great things you can just do pretty much anywhere.
Yeah.
You jump into a bar somewhere, you say, yeah, let's check out a speaker.
Yeah.
You know, get some chairs in. Yeah. And it's great.
So, how did you two get into it? Like, how do you become a stand up comedian? I was thinking that the other night when I was watching, I was at the Dice Show.
I was
thinking, like,
we were there.
I was there. I was a bit noisy at the beginning and then I calmed down.
I remember you, man. Yeah, you had a bit to drink, didn't you?
When that other drunk guy started going, I was like, oh, I don't want to be that guy.
I didn't even recognize you, man. Yeah. Good to see you.
Thank you. I enjoyed it, but it made me wonder, like, when do you actually decide? Like, what is it? Feedback from other people? You go, like, people think I'm funny, or is it like, what's this? How does it happen for you guys?
I was failing university,
uh-huh.
And I was like, you know what? Fuck it. Sorry.
Can we swear?
No, yes, you can swear on Beagle Radio.
Oh, awesome.
I mean, we encourage swearing.
Okay, yeah. No, failing a university degree and just being like, well, I got nothing left to lose. And then you're like,
what was the degree?
Engineering.
Oh, really? Yeah. That's quite an easy degree to fail, isn't it?
Like, oh, yeah.
It's quite an intense...
And if you know me, you get why I shouldn't be an engineer.
I see.
I am not focused. I went to the wrong place coming here and had to run up the street. I'm very sweaty currently.
So whose idea was engineering?
I was good at physics and I thought that's it. I hated uni though.
Oh, right. What, too demanding, too intense, too...
Probably laziness.
Yeah.
This isn't therapy at this point.
Yeah.
So what's your relationship with your mother like? I actually kind of want to know. I love your mother.
You haven't met my mother.
I'm sure I'd love her.
So you're failing at uni, then what? Like,
I like comedy, so might as well give it a go.
So you went to see a lot of comedy and thought...
I watched it on, like, YouTube.
Oh, okay. Who did you like?
Frankie Boyle. And this guy called Sean Rouse.
Oh, yeah.
Frankie Boyle's a British comedian, Scottish guy. Real angry.
Uh-huh.
Does political stuff, which I can never do. I just know nothing about politics.
Right.
I was like, I like that.
Right. So he's... Right. And so who's the other guy? Sean Rouse.
Sean Rouse, he's an American guy. He's dead now. But he was... Yeah, just... He was from the South, and he just had just really just dirty jokes.
Oh.
And it was just... He had... like arthritis.
Oh.
So he was on stage and he'd get carried on stage sometimes and then he would just sit down in this chair and be angry for an hour and people would be dying laughing and I was like, that's awesome.
Right.
And he seems to be living in spite of people just to do the jokes.
living in spite of people. Oh, I like it. How about you, Gavin? Who are your kind of inspirations?
Thomas Chapman is definitely one of my biggest inspirations.
Tell us a bit about him.
He's a bit off.
Like, great. Do you mean like inappropriate or?
I feel like he's very appropriate with me.
This is Thomas Chapman.
Thomas Chapman is my partner for comedy.
You lost me there. I was assuming
he's doing a bit of promo, baby.
Promo. Okay, tell us about Thomas's comedy.
Is
he angry? I mean,
no. Thomas's comedy is very funny. We'll leave it there.
Well, let's not explain it further.
I can't quite
swear. It's funny.
I don't quite know how to wrap up what your comedy is, to be honest. Like, it's like funny anecdotes that just like you get yourself into these just like insane situations that are just like. They're just laughable, you know, and it's just...
I say yes to slightly too much stuff, and then well, in it, I'm like, why am I here?
Right.
You should tell about that story you were telling me about. The
sleeping in a ditch?
No, the one we were talking about on Friday night.
Oh.
No, it wouldn't be appropriate for radio.
Well, you know, it's Beagle Radio, so we don't have advertisers to upset, luckily. So go ahead if you want to, like... It's nearly.
How many people listen?
We don't know, but we don't care. I mean,
do you want to tell?
so, I don't know where to start with this story.
Do you want to start with it?
You start. I'll fill in the blanks.
All right. So Thomas and I, we were talking about crazy sex stories. And,
crazy sex stories.
Crazy sex stories. And
I don't know which one you're going for with it?
the orgy.
Oh, the orgy.
And like Thomas, and, can we talk about this?
We don't have advertisers, so we can say what we like.
And then I think Thomas was saying he's got.
I'll tell it.
He's had more weird sex than he's had normal sex.
Which
just means he's had weird sex once.
Hey, but it's a great story.
Okay, let's hear it. Let's have it.
So I was 18, failing university. It's during this time I was trying to figure out what to do.
Were you ever doing well with university? No.
Okay.
I went in bad. I did great in high school. After that, it was like, no.
Okay.
And you know how newspapers have the classifieds at the back?
Yeah.
Where it's
sex, like, classifieds. Yeah.
It's the oldest form of, like,
does it still
in the world.
Of pervy.
Does it still happen?
Yeah, I didn't know it was still happening, and I was bored reading a newspaper with my family, and I going through them, laughing at them, because they're very funny.
Yeah, it's, like sex workers advertising themselves,
because it's sex workers advertising it, and right next to the classifieds is also, like, a children's bookshop day, right next to each other, and you're like, this seems too close together. And I was looking for it, and I saw an ad for an orgy. I was like, this can't be real.
Was it like an orgy that you pay to go to?
No, it was just...
Yeah, so you know it's good, right? If it's free. Nothing better than a free orgy. Right?
Oh.
Okay, so you
saw... overheads at all.
Just a lot of heads.
So you saw the ad for the orgy,
And I was like, why not?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, why not?
Yeah. So I was like, okay, and then I tore out the bit of paper... made sure my parents didn't see what I was doing.
You're like Charlie in the Chocolate Factory.
Yeah. I was like, oh, this is funny. I'll keep it for a set. No. golden ticket running down. And then just later that night, I was like, I didn't believe it. And then I just went to this apartment building, rang a door, and they were like, you here for it? And I was like, yeah. And he was like, sweet, come up.
And what were these people like?
All models. 10 out of 10.
That's no, why wait, it was
I thought
free.
I heard Thomas say old, and immediately...
Yeah. Well, you go to... It's free and in downtown Auckland, which...
doesn't happen often that free things happen in downtown Auckland?
No, so the class of people is a big range.
How many people were in the apartment?
There was, like, 4 women and, like, 8 men.
Oh.
It's
not a good ratio.
And one boy.
But I was thinking, for an orgy from a paper, a surprisingly good ratio of
fair enough.
I was expecting that it should be only dudes, and I was like, I'm in the wrong situation.
Oh, you're expecting it to be only dudes?
Well, I was like, this can't be the thing that straight people do.
Yeah.
It's got to be...
Like a gay orgy or something.
Right.
Of course.
Right.
But it didn't specify in the ad whether it was a gay or straight orgy?
No, I didn't.
Just said orgy, and they gave the address.
Yeah, it gave the address and the time.
I admire you for going this far with it. Most people would have gone.
He went a lot further.
Great. Yeah.
I'm
hoping that he did.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's not great radio.
I know. And you get in, and everyone's nude, and I was on time because I didn't know you could be fashionably late.
Today.
Everyone was naked.
Yeah, everyone was naked, so you get naked.
Yeah.
And then you just... nothing was happening yet, though. Everyone was just kind of milling around like it was, like, drinks.
With no clothes on.
Yeah, just no clothes.
Talking about stocks. investment opportunities in the lower side.
Real upper-class people. They're into crypto real early on.
Okay.
And I'm like, I'm a bit distracted by your balls hitting my legs. This Bitcoin thing, though.
You were comfortable... You're comfortable enough taking your clothes off.
I was 18. Everyone else was over 50. I was like, oh, I look great right now. This is
it's the only time Thomas has been the most alpha dude in the room.
I was like, I'm hot here.
Okay. I mean, surely this is where you get your material for stand-up. Like, you have to actually go out and have these experiences.
Thomas is like, I'm getting laid today, boy.
Okay, so keep going.
Fresh meat, ladies. Who is this weird boy here?
You kick you out, man. No one checked his ID.
No,
they just let you in.
Checked his ID.
Okay.
It's in a paper.
He could have been involved in a crime if they didn't check your ID.
So when did the action start then? Like, let's get on to
like
this.
7 o'clock sharp. They were like, hey, let's all move into the next room. And then everyone just started. And it was like one bed where everyone was either
and it was a single MC's. Bed.
Really?
It was a double.
Right. So everyone was on this double bed, either having sex or what, watching people.
Oh, and
people.
Everyone who wasn't having sex was just kind of standing around, just waiting in like a weird queue.
Was it erotic?
No.
It was awful.
I mean,
I was hard on the basis I was 18 alone.
Oh, I see. Okay. So you managed to get it up, which is great.
And I'm a boy.
Right. Fair enough. So
I don't have those problems yet.
Okay, great. You weren't.
Are you looking for tips, mate?
No. Well, yeah, I just like I'm just trying to imagine what it would be like for me, and I'd be like,
oh yeah.
That doesn't sound a very erotic kind of
it wasn't.
Situation.
Then,
anyway.
And then I just had sex with two of these ladies.
Right.
And then I was like, and then I came and I was like, oh, well, I'm going to leave now because once you come, you're like, I don't want to be here anymore.
I think it's called post nut clarity. Yes. Have you heard that? Have you heard that phrase?
Yeah.
Post nut clarity on the wall.
Oh, yeah.
So you left and
some other dudes on my foot.
They let you leave? They like
yes. Oh.
Yeah.
They didn't say wait, we're not done with you yet.
Come back, you're the sacrifice.
Yes. Or something like that.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
We're gonna make a voodoo doll out of you.
That's hilarious. Okay, so is that in your show, that story?
No.
Oh, my God.
That's just something I say for friends and radio.
Something for close friends and radio.
Yeah. Yeah, all the listeners, my close friends.
So Gavin, is Thomas's style of comedy, is that how he kind of gets up and tells anecdotes?
That was pretty much it, to be honest.
Yeah, that's
that was his thing. I just love how I kind of set you loose there, you know? I really put you
And I guess, you know, the thing I've noticed about comedians, you have to be fearless, don't you? You have to be prepared to go there. That's why we go to comedy. We go there for the unsayable things to be said.
Yes. Yeah,
And if you sense that the comedian's either unwilling or afraid to do that, then it's kind of a letdown.
Oh, yeah.
But
we're terrified after. When we get off stage and we're like, wait, why did I say that?
Oh, I see.
That's some of that post-nut clarity. After you get off on stage, you're like, wait a second.
Okay. So when was your first gig? Like, when did you first step on the stage and say, okay, I'm a stand-up comedian now?
Week before the orgy.
was it?
No, it was like a month before the orgy.
okay.
Christmas. Like 2018.
Okay.
And then I didn't do it until like mid of the next year.
Right. Mm-hmm. So how did the first gig go? Did you come off and go...
Okay enough that I was like, yeah, I can do this.
Yeah.
Cool.
But I've listened back to it. It's not good. Mm-hmm. I was delusional.
Really? So you've got better since then?
Yeah, I would hope.
What's the getting better? Like, what are you... Better material? Better timing? Better what?
Better material and then just learn how to write a joke.
Yeah. Oh, I see.
Because you're funny when you start.
Yeah.
But you don't know how to tell people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I'm funny, trust me.
Yeah.
I don't think everyone is funny when they start, though. I think one of the big things is, like, figuring out how you're seen by the audience, right? And then just putting yourself in contradicting scenarios to that. Like, or with you, I mean, maybe not. but it's, like, it's really much, like, figuring out what your character is on stage.
Right.
And then...
So it's a persona that you...
I think it's a persona that is shaped by how the audience sees you. It is informed by how the audience sees you, and then you dial it in according to what you want to say and how you want to deliver it.
But it's still fundamentally you, isn't it? It's still fundamentally Gavin. It's still fundamentally Thomas.
It's a version, at least for me, it's a version of myself.
Okay, what kind of version? Like
a funny one. yeah, you'd hope.
So how did you find out you were funny? Like when did you realize that?
What orgy
Vietnam,
knocked it?
Yeah, Vietnam, 1976. I was in the trees. No, I had...
You were in the trees?
Yeah.
Switching sides.
Were you that kid at school that was always a little shit?
I was definitely funny. Well, come on. I was definitely funny in school. Like, definitely like the class clown sort of thing. And like, for me, I don't know, just doing dumb shit in school. And then I think I did stand-up first time in 2018 as well.
Oh, yeah.
Where September was that? In Wellington. Uh-huh. Fringe Bar in Wellington. Great bar if anyone's there. Go check it out. If anyone's listening in Wellington right now.
It's called the Fringe Bar.
Fringe Bar,
and it's like a good place for... They do open mic nights and stuff
open
like that?
Open mic, just great for stand-up comedy, performances in general. Always shout that place out. So good.
Yeah.
But yeah, I went up on stage.
Cannon Club, also good.
Cavern Club's also good. Yeah.
They're next to each other.
They're right next to each other. But yeah, I did stand up.
What were you doing in Wellington? Like, why were you there?
I grew up there. Yeah, I grew up there. Yeah, right. So I'm American, obviously, but my my parents moved there when I was like 9, and okay. So we just lived there for most of my life.
Were you also failing at uni, or were you just...
No, I was actually very talented.
Very talented.
Yes, and then I decided to do stand-up.
Right.
And boy, oh boy.
Drains from you.
What were your career options at that stage before you...
Honestly, like, I did a history degree. I joke about that.
Were you going to just go and work at Tabapa?
Yeah. I did a history degree, and then I finished that up. And then, like, 2018, I finished my degree in, like, 2018, I finished my degree.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started doing stand-up throughout that period, and then just did it. I got an office job when I was working at Ministry of Business, Innovation and Employment,
mm-hmm.
and I fucking hated it. I really hated it. Yeah. Yeah, it was just so boring. And
soul-destroying.
Really was, just, like, real draining.
Mm.
And then... I remember this one time I got this catering company. I lost them a contract. You want to hear this story?
Yeah.
All right. So I was like a personal assistant at MB. It was just like the least masculine job. You know what I mean? Like, yes, Mr. Campbell. It was just like me and like a bunch of like 45-year-old women. Like, we would all just like shit talk. I got into it though. I really lent into like the fucking...
Hey, the gossip and
everything. It's great. Like,
shit talking the boss and...
100%. It's just, you know, and they're all like... It's terrible.
Why else do you work other than to shit talk the boss? Other than
shit talk. Well, literally, yeah. But anyway, so there was this one woman who had like been at MB for like 15 years, right? It's like a long time, career kind of deal. She was finally leaving. And it was my job to organize all the catering for this group.
Yeah.
And I ordered it for the 18th, right? At least I thought I did. Right? And so the 18th is a Friday. And they call me on the 17th and like, hey, your food's here. It's like $500 worth of food, right? They're like, your food's here. I'm like, oh my God, no. So I run down. I'm like, you got to help me out. Like, what am I going to do here? And they go, well, you can either buy it again. And I was like, well, then I have to pay for it myself. And I'm not doing that. And they're like, oh, or you could try and like reheat it the next day. I was like, holy shit. So I get all the food, right? And I'm like, I have to store it somewhere. I have to store it somewhere safe.
I'll hide it.
Hide it. Yeah. I got to hide it somewhere safe.
Smuggling food.
Yeah. Right. And so I go to the cleaners of the building.
Yeah.
And they have like a tiny fridge. Uh-huh. And I have to get them to move all their food out of the fridge so I can store like all this $500 worth of food. Go to bed. Because I have to, you know, it's the next day.
With all the cleaning supplies.
Yeah. It smelled like Dettol. Yeah. The food tasted like, Dettol. I go back the next day, and I'm there at 9, right? And the thing's at 10, so I have to heat up all the food. I'm like, all right, that's an hour. That's plenty of time to heat up all the food, right, in the oven. I'm heating up. It doesn't heat up. It's just getting longer and longer. Because I got 5 minutes before the thing, the food's still cold. And I'm like, oh, my God. So I just slam it in the microwave, blast it. And then we go up, take it all up for like, you know, like 100 people are there for the spread.
Oh, that many people.
Yeah, it's like a proper thing, right?
Yeah.
And then they're all eating it. And like half of it's still cold and stuff like that. And then I fully just blame the catering company. I was just like, yeah, these guys really messed up the order. Never again.
That's a shit thing to do.
Yeah, but you know, I needed a job.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay, right. Then we'll get fired.
I quit after. I quit after.
Well, so you lost them the contract and then you quit?
Yeah. Okay. Come see my comedy show tonight.
Does that make it into the show?
No, that does not. I haven't told anything that makes it into the show, to be honest. I don't feel like anything should be making it into the show, quite frankly, after our... yeah.
What do you mean? How do you top Thomas's orgy, or like?
I got some other stories.
Yeah, Thomas's orgy is a good story. I don't have any stories like, you know. No, I don't really have any crazy.
So
stories,
what is your stuff like? Observational kind of
anecdotes. It's funny anecdotes. I got some funny stories. I think. No orgy stories. Yeah. I mean, I've got a threesome story, but I'm not really going to tell that right now. It's not very funny.
That's just bragging.
So what's
three
the
guys.
What's,
on the radio?
So a lot of people are good at. A lot of people got a lot of stories, but like, what's the difference? What's the difference watching a comedian tell you a story? Like, what's the key kind of? What is it about? Is it timing or?
Probably definitely timing. Thomas thought.
Yeah, it's just the timing.
Yeah.
Because everyone's got stories.
Yeah.
And some people have great stories, but they'll tell you the end instantly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we're like, oh, me, like...
Yeah.
And then we all just jumped off the bridge, and you're like, what?
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, yeah, you know my friend, Matt. And you're like, no, tell me who Matt is.
Right, so you've got to kind of, you've got to build it, sort of...
You've got to build some tension in there, you know?
They like, go to the most exciting thing first, and then you're like, well, the rest of the story, they're just like,
Yeah. And watching the Dice show the other night, I was thinking one person that I particularly enjoyed was Ed.
Yes.
You know, he would just go off on these flights of surrealism.
Yes.
And he seemed to be very comfortable in that space, which would have been terrifying for a lot of other people, and was terrifying for some of the people who were on stage that night. You could see they were just like, you know. Yeah. And I guess it's about having the confidence. Is it like a confidence thing, or is it, do you have to actually be a storyteller? Like, you have to know how to, like...
It's like singing, right? You could learn to be a good singer, but some people are just better than others. Yeah. Right? You know what I mean? Like, he's a great storyteller. You can learn the skill of storytelling. Just like anything. But yes, some people just have a gift.
So look, what's a memorably terrible experience that you've had doing stand-up?
So last night, we were doing our show. Last night was great. And if you ask anybody who went, they're lying. I did a gig on the Bluebridge Ferry this one time.
Oh.
And going that was
South Island.
Yeah, going to the South Island. That was the worst gig of my life.
They have stand-up comedians on the Bluebridge Ferry?
No.
Not anymore.
Not anymore, yeah. And some would argue, not when I was there either. We were on the boat, and we were performing for free passage to get from the north to the south, right?
You can do that?
No, not anymore. It was a real one-and-done situation.
Right.
So we get on the boat, and we're supposed to do an hour of stand-up. We get into this like tiny room. It's like the cinema room.
Yeah.
And so we're in there's a room here, and there's another room to the left of it, which is another cinema room. And they turn the TVs off in the room that we're going to be performing in, but they're all glass all around. So you can see into the room next door, and the TVs are still playing, but the speakers are all hooked up to one system. So Mulan was playing while we were doing stand-up comedy, and arguably much more funny, because I have a few jokes about Mulan. No, I don't. We were on stage, and then my buddy Aaron goes on first, right? We're supposed to do an hour. After 10 minutes, he gets seasick.
Oh, no.
He gets seasick on the front, has to run to the bathroom, throw up, goes and throws up, right? And then I have to get up. Now, keep in mind, the audience was like 70% like pensioners, you know, so really old people.
Yeah.
And then 30% fully patched Mongrel Mob members. Fully patched.
What were they doing on the Bluebridge Ferry?
They were just getting from A to B, man.
They were wearing their patches?
They're allowed to on the Bluebridge, not on Inter-Islander. So Inter-Islander is government-run. Bluebridge is completely private. So they always go, Bluebridge.
So they can wear their gear. So
would be a weird ad for Bluebridge. Preferred ferry of the Mongrel Mob.
Yeah.
Endorsed by the Mongrel.
Yeah.
Okay, so that was your audience. So was that somewhat intimidating?
It sucked, man. Yeah, so I get up and like, I don't have any material that like hits both those groups at the same time. You know, pensioners and Mongrel Mob. Yeah. I think I'm on there and I'm like, I'm bombing hard, like really, really hard. I'm getting heckled by Mulan in the back. And then it was silence, like to the point where it's like I was almost speaking a different language. You know, people just didn't understand what I was.
Just blank faces.
Blank faces just didn't understand what I was saying. And I get to one bit, like one of the Mongrel Mall guys was asleep, like fully asleep. And it was like kind of funny. It was probably the funniest bit of that show. And I wasn't going to like wake his ass up.
No, you weren't going to go, wake up.
Yeah. Hey, pussy. My talking. Friend Aaron over there wants you to wake up. So we're up there. And then I told this one joke. And I had like, it was like 15 minutes. And I was like, fuck this, right? Mm. And this old lady's just like, I was on stage a few times. I was cracking up at how bad it was going. Because I was like, oh, this sucks so much. And you're telling a bit and you know it's not going to land. And you're just like, we were talking about this last night. It feels
you
like
you don't do your time though. They're kicking you off.
Yeah, to be honest, I think the audience is going to do that anyway. But like when you're eating shit on stage, it just feels like you're like when you're swimming and you're just It just felt like that.
And all it was that the audience wasn't engaged. Like you were doing the same material that you.
I just don't know if like a boat at 4 p.m. with Mongrel Mob and pensioners is the way to go, you know?
These Mongrel Mob members just wanted to watch Mulan in peace.
Yeah, here I am. Ruining Mulan.
So did Aaron recover from his seasickness and come back and save you?
No. Oh, he hung around the back.
He let you drown.
He let me drown. Oh. And then
That might have been an excuse.
Yeah.
He was doing bad 5 minutes and like, oh no, I'm seasick.
But it was weird that the Mongrel Mob like we're on the Bluebridge Ferry, right? Because that's the color of their rival gang.
That's true.
Yeah, the National Party.
I guess if there was a Red Bridge Ferry, they'd be on the Red Bridge Ferry, but there isn't.
Yeah, there'd be a Red Bridge Ferry, yeah.
Maybe there should, but whatever.
Yeah. Comedy shows, we never anyone's not expecting a comedy show is the most jarring thing anyone else there.
It becomes harassment.
So didn't they know there was a comedy show?
No. Yeah, no one got on that boat being like, this is the comedy boat.
So they weren't there to see a comedy show?
No, they were just there to get depicted.
They would just need somewhere to sit, and there was this guy, irritating guy, trying to tell jokes.
Hi, guys, with this freaking mic stand, you know. Hey! And the worst of it was, like, we bombed for, like, you know, we finished up our show, and there was, like, 3 hours of the boat ride to go.
Oh, no, so you had to hide.
There's nowhere to hide. So you're just sitting on this boat, and, like, people don't look at you. They're, like, ashamed of you, you know? And it's just, and you're there, and you're like, what am I doing with my, like, what am I doing with my life?
My life. We have one of those moments?
Yeah, this is so degrading.
And you recovered from that, though, and carried on?
No. It's been with me for the past 2 years.
Oh.
No, it's, I've recovered. The bombs, the more you bomb, I think you just learn how to handle it a bit better.
Yeah.
You know? And then it's better when you bomb with other people.
Oh, yeah.
When you bomb alone, God, there's nothing worse than that.
But bombing when a TV is in the background is, and people are like, shut up, I'm watching.
Yeah, that's a special kind of bomb.
I did a gig where the rugby was on, the rugby was on one side, and they were watching across, and then we were standing to the side of it, and the mic broke. So we didn't have a mic, so we were just yelling at people in a bar while they were trying to watch the rugby. And you're like, at that point, you're a crazy person. You're just, no microphone, they're just like, what is happening?
Yeah, I really hate that kind of, when there's a screen in the space and it's,
it ruins it.
You know, it's almost hard to not look at a screen, isn't it?
Yeah, especially when there's something good on.
Yeah.
You know? So they wanted to watch the rugby. We were the problem.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, so have you enjoyed coming up to the Whangarei and do Fringe After Dark? Seems like quite a...
Yeah, great meth up here.
Yeah. I brought my own.
There's plenty to go around.
Yeah.
You guys don't have that many meth heads, though.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
No.
I don't see any wandering around.
I see many more meth heads in Auckland. I was disappointed.
Really?
People keep telling me about the meth up here, and then they're just like, it's fine.
Yeah. So you can easily... I'm not very... switch, like, you can easily identify a meth head walking down
the street. Yeah, they're usually the ones whacking off in the middle of the street.
Well, that's what... Yeah, I guess I'm just...
Is that just cultural up here?
Is that just a normal...
Have you given Whangarei some shit in your show? Like, have you... Because you're normally insulting... Really.
You don't usually insult the town over... Unless you're on radio. You usually, like, you know, talk crap about Wapu or Waipu or...
you can talk
crap all the other towns around.
Yeah, exactly. But this town, this town's the one.
I also can't talk shit. I look like I live in my car currently. I just got dirty clothes and drink bottles in there.
You actually do live in your car?
No, currently? I just...
No, yeah.
It's been a night up here and I look like I do.
No, we've actually enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. I went to a cool party last night. This guy broke a wall.
I didn't.
No one knows about it.
Mr. Oliver Scripps, if you're listening.
Yeah.
I didn't break your friend's wall.
He did.
That's funny.
It's cool. People are lovely. People are actually very, very sweet up here. I'm not kidding. Like, lovely people. I haven't had any problems.
Hopefully they'll forgive a wall being broken.
Okay, well, let's wrap it up because I need to get down to hearty me hearties. So it's been great meeting you guys, and thanks for sharing your very intimate stories.
Yeah, that's okay.
That was.
Do you want to share more intimate moments like Thomas has come to our show tonight?
Okay, great. You promised intimate moments like that.
Thomas will.
Bit too intimate. You go. Please stop talking. No, it's a great show. Fringe After Dark, 6:30.
6:30, okay. Elevator comedy. Tickets are selling out fast.
I'm sure they are.
Yeah.
I will try to make it because there's not as much on today as there was yesterday. But and then you've got Weekends with Dad is on again tonight.
Don't go to that.
Is it on? I thought he drove back.
They've left, but apparently there are 8 people going currently, but if more turn up, they'll drive up. I don't know. I was talking to Matt last night they are unsure if they're doing a show. Yeah.
Oh,
so if you were going to go to theirs, come to ours instead.
That's a good opportunity to get 8 more people to your show.
Hey. Yeah, we should just talk shit about comedians on this. Just see where it leads us.
Let's go alphabetically. AJ.
Okay, so Weekends with Dad is a maybe, all right? So you might be the only... act on at Fringe After Dark tonight.
Yeah, hell yeah. I mean, that's a testament to our skill.
Yeah.
Come on down, 6:30. It'll be fun. Yeah. You know, it'll be fun.
Sounds like fun. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, you're going to be there.
Yeah, when you meet people, you're kind of like, yeah, I want to check it out.
Yeah.
Especially now that I know that side of Thomas.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, cool. Thanks for coming in, and I'm playing some Baroque pop hits, and let's play a song by
Savage
Vampire Weekend. Thanks for coming in, you two. No time to discuss it. Can't speak when the waves reach our house.
The thundering arena. I see you when the violence ends. For now, ciao, ciao, bambina.
To an extent, yeah.
Blood roses, blood roses, back on the street now. Blood roses, blood roses, back on the street now. Can't forget the things you never said. Long days like these start with me thinking. Chickens get a taste, you'll make it. Chickens get a taste, you'll make it. Yes. You gave him your blood and your warm little down. He likes killing you after you've done. You think round and round like good little roses. blood roses, blood roses, back on the street
That was Blood Roses by Tori Amos, and I'm going to wrap up the show now and head down to Hearty Me Hearties, and I think that's what you should do too. It's on, started at 11, and it's running till 2, and it's going to be fun. Don't let the weather put you off. I hope you've enjoyed the show. That was great chatting to Gavin and Thomas, who are Elevator Comedy, and they're on tonight at 6:30 at Fringe After Dark. Intangential 2 is at 116 at 5:30 p.m. Back to Square One is at Hihiawa Cultural Centre at 2 p.m. And Open Up Your Heart at 7:30 p.m. here at 116. Sunday the 2nd of October, 7:30 p.m. till 10 p.m. So that's the main show here tonight at 116. And Weekends with Dad is possibly on at 9:30 p.m. at Fringe After Dark. So really look forward to seeing you at those events. Thank you for supporting Whangarei Fringe. It's a rare opportunity to have so much to go and see. There's no excuse for not getting out there. Hope you've enjoyed listening. And if you want to hear any of those interviews, the podcast is available on beagleradio.co.nz shortly after the show finishes. Thanks so much to Ursula and Dave for supporting the show and helping to get it out there. And Matt will be with you tomorrow from 9 till 12 and on Tuesday from 9 till 12 with more guests, interviews, previews, reviews, and it's probably some better music than I've played, but, you know, at least I tried. All right, thanks for listening, and here I'm going to put you back onto the playlist.